Hi, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to another episode of Love Letters Live. And love letters, as we've talked about for years now, can be any kind of a letter to anyone. They don't have to be just for romance, although those are nice. They can be for anything, for gratitude, for I remember you, for I want to invite you into my life, for somebody new or somebody you haven't seen in a while. It can be to your pets. It can be to parents and grandparents who are no longer here and have had an influence on you that you'd like to thank or have done you some damage that you'd like to forgive. It doesn't matter. It's your truth put to paper in a compassionate way. And that, to me, is what makes a love letter. It's about the other guy. Today's guest is David Cowan, who is the administrative assistant of the Prison University Project at San Quentin Prison and the director of reintegration. So, David, I'm just going to go to you. Introduce us a little bit about you. Where are you from? What was your early family life like? Who was in it?
Well, I was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I'm one of six kids. I have
oldest, youngest, middle.
I'm the next to the youngest, mm-hmm. And I have three brothers and two sisters. Mm-hmm. I was born in the suburbs, and raised in the suburbs. I had a pretty good life growing
Sounds
up.
Sounds nice, suburbs. Yeah.
It was really nice. Mm-hmm. I had a really structured household. Education was valued in our house. After I graduated high school, I went to the military, mm-hmm. Joined the Air Force.
Did you see active service?
I was in active service. I actually did not go to Iraq when the war broke out. I wound myself in prison shortly afterwards. And
was that when you were in San Quentin?
I was in San Quentin. Mm-hmm. And while I was in there, I just had to take a really long, hard look at what got me there. Mm-hmm. And that just meant starting from my earliest memory and going all the way up to just make a clear path to the decisions that I made that wound me up.
That you were going to make in the future, you mean the decisions you were going to?
Yes.
How long were you there?
I was incarcerated altogether 22 years.
Oh, my goodness. That is a very long time. Yes. This must have been very hard for your parents.
Yeah, extremely hard. Yeah. It really just
And far away from home.
Right. They would come see me a couple times a year.
Oh, really? How nice.
Until about 2008, my father died. Mm-hmm. But they always hoped that I would mm-hmm. be released one day. I was released. It took a lot of work.
But I want to ask you about that, because there had to be people there who helped you along the path.
Oh, absolutely.
Can you talk about what the programs were, and if you want to even name the people just for honoring them?
Well, I think probably some of the most effective people were people that I met at San Quentin.
And
they were people like, I would say, Shahid Rouse, Ernest Morgan. And
these were other people who were incarcerated.
They were other people.
With good influence on you.
Absolutely.
Because they'd been there longer, or they were just farther along their own?
Both. Mm-hmm. They'd been there longer, and they showed me how, they gave me a picture of what it looks like when somebody develops like emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. And so it was just, great, learning about myself under them.
Now, you talk about developing emotional intelligence. Do you think that's what you didn't have when you went in and then you learned it, or it was just undercover?
I think it was undercover. I mm-hmm. think I was almost always in touch with my emotions. Mm-hmm. But learning how they affect the decisions I make, just at times when a lot of times people don't realize that they're making decisions based on baggage that they're carrying.
Uh-huh.
And then how those decisions, whether they may be good or bad, deeply affect other people. they may seem like they're minor decisions, just a word, you know, just a look, but mm-hmm. they can mm-hmm. really deeply affect other people. So
you're talking about harm done to other people.
Yes.
Even uh-huh.
It can sure. be harm done, and also, you know, healthy things that you do.
Yes. You want to talk? We'll talk about the Prison University Project. I'm guessing that you are one of their graduates and that you went through that.
Yes. So while I was actually sent to San Quentin by mistake.
Really?
Yeah, from another prison. And while I was there, one of the first things I saw was a sign that had a sign-up sheet under it asking people to sign up for prison mm-hmm. For the
University
uh-huh. Project. And so I went there. I enrolled, and by the time my counselor figured out that I was there by mistake,
I want to ask you about that. Yeah,
she said, "Well, you were supposed to be sent to another prison, and I can make sure that you get there if you want." And I said, "Well, I'm in college now, so I would like to stay." And
I have a question. Do you know what the mistake was?
Well,
just some bureaucratic mistake. Is that
it was? I was at a prison. Called Soledad.
Oh, I know Soledad, sure.
They sent me to CMC to take an x-ray course. And so after I completed it, I was supposed to go.
Oh, an x-ray course, yeah. So you could be a technician when you, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm, right. After I completed it, I was supposed to go to CTF, which is Soledad.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was after I completed it, they sent me to San Quentin instead. And so my counselor mm-hmm. saw that mm-hmm. in the record. And
she just, everybody just let it slide.
Yeah.
Yes. She yeah. must have seen that you were going to be a valuable part of that university project.
I was already sinking like my roots into yeah. that and other programs.
They could see success so, coming. So what is it you studied? I mean, you were a high school graduate.
Well, all of the graduates get a general associate's
degree. See. Yes. Okay. And well, some people got trade certificates, and there are different things that you can get, right?
Well, those were from different programs.
Right. Oh, I see.
So the state also has an educational system,
uh-huh.
and part of that educational system are vocations.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were people graduating who were not graduating from the Prison University Project.
I see. Okay, so you all graduate on the same day, but the Prison University Project is a separate thing.
Yes.
I see. What did you study?
Well, we all had, I studied, you know, classes in the humanities, mm-hmm. Science, mm-hmm. math, English.
Did you have a preference or something you were better at than the other things that you like better? Or?
Well, I'll say that statistics wasn't the most fun class for me.
Was not?
No,
okay.
It was not. But I ended up liking it by the time it was over.
Oh, good. Okay.
My favorite class was probably English 102 because I had an instructor who said that there's no such thing as a perfect paper.
Oh, good.
And so it gave me a challenge, and I always got an A-, never the
A.
Oh,
I thought you were going to see something else. Here's what I heard. When there's no such thing as a perfect paper, you see as a challenge to doing a perfect paper.
It, yes.
Good for you.
Yes.
I heard, don't worry about it. Everybody's welcome. You don't have to be perfect, and that sounds fine to me. Okay. Oh, interesting.
She probably meant it that way.
I don't know. Yes, but, go ahead.
Well, so I thought, well, you know, I'm used to getting A's, so I'm going to get an A here too. And
good for you.
My writing got much better during that semester.
Mm-hmm.
I still never got the A. It was always an A-. She pushed me really hard. That was actually my favorite class.
You know, an A- is an A.
Yeah, well, yes. Yes.
It
dropped my GPA a little bit. But
I just want to say that. And so so you are a graduate of this program. And then talk about leaving. Talk about, you know, getting yourself positioned to walk out that door and back into community, the larger community life.
Well,
if you would. And what's that like? And how did you know you were ready? And all kinds of questions.
Well, for people who spend a long time in there,
mm-hmm.
You really never know how ready you're going to be when it comes to day-to-day
mm-hmm.
Decisions. You will know that you're ready emotionally, or you'll know that you're ready psychologically, and there are many people who helped me get ready to that point, who are actually still in there and ready themselves. Mm-hmm. However, when someone leaves, particularly in my case, I'm not from San Francisco. Mm-hmm. I'm not from the Bay Area. And so I was kind of paroling blind. And if it weren't for the support of the people, my colleagues, mm-hmm. And
who had already been released or either still in or out?
Both. Mm-hmm. And also, what I mean by my colleagues are the staff at mm-hmm. the Prison University Project and other programs, people from other programs who they were just there from, mm-hmm. from day one. They met me at the gate. They helped me get into housing, helped me learn how to drive again.
Oh, my goodness, of course. Yeah.
Took me on tours around the Bay Area.
So you don't think about that kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, everything. Just
mm-hmm. So when you're ready to leave, are you feeling that you're going to be welcome into society as the intelligent, lovely man you are? Or is it nerve-wracking that you think people are going to hold this past still as they see you?
I think both. Mm-hmm. Mostly nerve-wracking because it seems that the general attitude of society is to want to marginalize someone, to hold the past mm-hmm. against them.
Well, because that has become a definition of yourself.
Right.
So you've got to crack that open, right?
Yeah, in a way. And yeah. I think, you know, I think that once people get to know me and then other people
sure.
who have gone through the same journey, then they realize, oh, well, we have to make a new definition for this person. Mm-hmm. You know, until...
And that has to follow your own new definition of yourself, right?
Absolutely.
You would think.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's like, in a way, it's like I'm on a lifelong job interview where I'm always trying to sell myself.
I think the reality is that there are most people are in that position. You know, you meet somebody new and it's up to you to make known the value you are.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's really a good way of looking at it. And
So what was the first thing you did when you came out? And I want to get to how you became the administrative assistant of this program and what it does.
Okay. So, I actually worked for the program on the inside. Mm-hmm. I was the clerk. And as I was preparing to leave, I asked Jody, who's the executive director, if she would like to keep me on.
Oh, good for you.
And he said, sure. And so I had a job as soon as I got out, which is really uncommon. A lot of people have a really horrible time trying to find jobs,
sure.
particularly after having a record.
Yes. And this is a time where people are having a horrible time finding jobs anyway.
Right.
And so
that,
yes.
That makes them even a lower priority.
So you set up an office somehow outside?
Well, so the PUP has an office out, about a mile from San Quentin. And
uh-huh.
so I just
go there every day.
Started
yeah.
working. I took a week off before I started.
Yes, to get to know your new.
Yeah. It mm-hmm. was hard for me because I was known as a workaholic. And so I had to actually.
But isn't that a good thing?
To be
being a workaholic to some degree when you've had the life you've had and made regretful decisions, that you stay really busy and focused so hard on the good that you're doing? I'm just curious about that.
I think it is. However, mm-hmm. A lot of my support system, both inside and outside, particularly the people on the inside, were always quick to remind me that, you know, moderation is important.
Okay. And that you get to take some time for yourself and
right.
please yourself too. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And,
now, what about the director of reintegration?
So
what does that entail?
So I'm the director of reintegration for another program called the Alliance for Change. And We basically run a resocialization program on the inside.
Okay, what does that word mean?
So everyone, based on the idea that everyone behaves the way that they behave because they're socialized into that behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And
you mean over a lifetime?
Over a lifetime.
Learning the habits that we learned. Uh-huh.
Correct, from the environment around us and from things that we interpret as working for us. As individuals.
Oh, that you interpret as working for you.
Right.
Okay.
And so we run a social justice program on the inside. And as the men go through the social justice program, they have a chance to kind of look at themselves within the context of society.
Mm-hmm.
That way, we help them to re-socialize themselves.
Okay, but so how do you do that? I mean, what is that?
Well, it's based on developing an understanding of who you are in society, how society works, and so we run a variety of series of workshops. Some
workshops that are kind of retraining sessions in themselves?
Right, and, uh-huh. and they're all structured around justice, whether it be retributive justice or restorative justice.
What is retributive justice?
Retributive justice is basically punishment-based justice.
Retribution against the person who's committed the crime.
Right,
uh-huh.
Right. And then, so there are other types of justice, like restorative justice, where, unlike retributive justice, which really kind of has a viewpoint that when a crime is committed, it's committed against the state. And so the victim is kind of left out of the process once it happened, and the state just responds to the damage to the law.
Uh-huh.
And so
damage to the law.
Right.
Interesting.
Or the rule of law. And so it has to reinforce, for everyone that the law
is supreme. Yes.
And
restorative?
Restorative justice kind of asks different questions, so it comes to different solutions. And I would say the comparison would be that retributive justice would ask questions like, what crime is committed, who committed the crime, and then what should the punishment be?
Mm-hmm.
Restorative justice...
To fit the crime.
Right. And restorative justice asks a different set of questions. What crime was committed? Who was harmed?
Oh, that's so
good.
And then
how
yes.
do we make things right? And so they're coming from two different perspectives. And they therefore come to two different solutions.
So I remember learning years ago, decades ago, that the whole point of a penitentiary was where people go to do penitence. That is to say, they go to think about what they've done.
Exactly, and a lot of the men, because the system isn't designed to operate that way, the people who do that are men who and women who just determine themselves that that's what they're going to use that time for.
Uh-huh.
And so they come out... very highly developed in terms of emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the 32, 33 prisons in California, San Quentin is the only one.
Really?
And even the structure of San Quentin, it's still part of the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, but mm-hmm. and so it's not structured to operate that way. But because of the programs and because of all of the volunteers
mm-hmm.
And because of the men who are there
mm-hmm.
to do the work, it turns out it kind of functions that way.
That's very nice. And much more, not the word successful, but effective, I would think.
Absolutely.
You know, if you know who you've harmed and what you've done and actually learn the power of your actions,
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people who do things don't realize the power of the actions they've done. I mean, it's kind of an immediate...
Yeah, exactly. And that's when you see a lot of, once you watch the men make those realizations, you see this amazing transformation.
I'm wondering if you see transformation from unconscious to leadership.
There are so many leaders in there.
I saw that, incredible. By the way. You know, I just wanted to say for those who are listening, David and I met when I was fortunate enough to have gone to the San Quentin Prison University Project graduation. And I was aware that I was surrounded by, I was not aware of why the men were there. I was aware that I was surrounded by so much welcoming, graciousness, and leadership. These were strong and welcoming people. Now, I understand that this is maybe a special group, the people who go for the education. So maybe that's, you know, from the beginning, it attracts.
I think that...
But it was astounding. Yeah. It was quite a lesson.
It is, and it's the potential that everyone has, and a lot of it, yes. It depends on opportunities. I mean, yes. Even at other prisons, or even in for some people in San Quentin, once people are presented with an opportunity to become
shine.
Like better,
yes, yes, I believe that,
to just enhance themselves, they usually jump on it.
This reintegration program. So, is your part of it working with the people who are still incarcerated and getting them ready for leaving? Or do you get them once they're out and you help find them jobs and housing and
mostly,
as was done for you?
Yeah, mostly once they're out. And
okay.
So for all of the people that supported me and taught me how to ride public transportation and all that, I'm just paying that forward.
Oh, and, okay. So I want to make a shift to love letters. Every love letter I've ever seen in my experience has changed a life for the better. Sometimes it changes the life of the person who receives the letter. I shouldn't say sometimes. It always changes the life of the person who wrote it. Because, just like you're saying, you're paying it forward. You get a gratitude aura around. If you were to write, have you ever written a love letter?
Well, in third grade, when I was...
Who'd you write it to?
A kid. A girl that I liked.
Oh, you still remember that. Nobody forgets the love letters they write. I'm so impressed with that. Is this somebody you've lost touch with totally? Or
yes.
But she's somehow still in your heart that you remember you wrote to her.
Of course.
Oh, that's nice. Do you know whether she's alive or?
I don't. I'm sure she is. And she's doing well.
That's nice. Love letters you wrote to your parents and your family when you were incarcerated?
Yes.
So were those love letters?
They absolutely were.
Right. So you have written them. And I was struck when I went to that graduation that everyone who got up and spoke, everything that was spoken was a love letter. It wasn't written down yet. I want to work on that. And just such honest expressions of how people felt. And they were about other people. They always ended up to be about other people. Nobody was going on about me. The beauty of them, acknowledging and honoring what other people have brought to your life. So tell me right now, we just have a few more minutes. If you're writing a love letter right this minute, who's it going to go to?
I would want to write like a mass love letter to many people.
Okay, that's a really good, because there are many people you're grateful to.
Absolutely.
Okay. Oh, I have a thought about that. A mass letter is a tricky thing to do because you don't feel exactly the same about, every person has some little unique difference that struck you. And you want to honor that. You want to acknowledge that. What about writing a mass letter, working it out on the computer, so you get your thoughts down, and you were talking about the people who helped you and showed you around the city and taught you this and taught you that once you got out. I'm guessing that's what you're talking about, those people, right?
Yes.
How many are there?
Oh my, I don't even...
20? 15? 106?
At least... My support system is quite large.
Okay. Well, okay, so how about this? Your signature has to be on there. You can't write 50 letters. I mean, you could if you wanted to, but that's kind of daunting.
Okay.
And you're busy, and we don't do that anymore so much. Although, if you ever wanted to, like before you go to bed, one each night for 2 months. It's a wonderful project.
Yeah.
But to write down kind of a mass thing, and then... in your own handwriting, if you can, and if you can't, you run them off, but then you do a little PS for each person. You sign your own name, so they have that. And then maybe a little PS, you know, I want to just give you an extra thank you for the 4 days you spent with me that you didn't have to, showing me which restaurants I should never bother to go into, you know, whatever it is,
right,
or where to get the best shirts at the best prices, whatever it is, somebody, every person offered you something a little special.
Absolutely.
And, if you just run it off on the computer, it's not the same as a love letter,
right?
Because you haven't touched it. So when you sign your name and you write a little PS and your hands are on that piece of paper, by the time they get that letter, they're actually touching something that you have touched. And it's like holding hands across time and distance. And I say that all the time. Will you do it?
I will.
To as many people as you can.
I will.
You know, even if you start out with the three that you can think of, you're going to find out, because you're an expressive person. And I can see that there's a lot in you that makes you smile with gratitude. I can see it. And you'll be amazed at the reactions that people will have. Some of them you won't see, but some of them you will. And they're going to keep that letter forever. It's going to go in their treasure box. And I also do want to say that you're an important part of history. You're an important part of social history and of prison history and of the world becoming better. And someday when people find your letters, it's going to be a treasure. It's going to be part of real history. That's how we know what really happened from people writing letters, not so much from historians guessing what they can put together. So what about your parents? Now, your father died before you were released. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
And did you like him?
I loved him.
Oh,
dearly.
Yes. What about a letter to him? Now, I know he's gone, but wouldn't he like to hear that he doesn't have to worry about you anymore, that you're okay and better? Better than okay?
Yes, he would. I tell myself that he knows.
He probably does. But writing it down has a different power. Monique Lassar was here yesterday, and she talked about taking her letter and taking it to her mother's grave and reading it to her, which just gave me chills. Now, maybe you can't do that. But you can take that letter and you can write it, and then you can just mail it to yourself.
Yes, that's a good idea.
You know, what did you call him? Dad, daddy, father,
dad?
So, dear dad, I'm writing this to you because there's a lot to catch up with, but I'm going to mail it to myself so that I can always keep it and see it as a reminder of how much I love you and how much you mean to me still, and whatever it is you want to say.
Yeah.
Do it and mail it to yourself and see the power it has when you receive that letter.
Okay. I would definitely do that.
I wish we had more time. Thank you so much for doing this with me today and teaching us so much. I learned a lot.
It's my pleasure.
I'm grateful for that. And I want to say what I always say, and I'm going to say it to you and to everybody. You think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter. Writing a love letter is a special occasion. And one you should treat yourself to as often as you can. You have 10 minutes in between you're dressed and you've got to be someplace. You've got 10 minutes to kill. You don't want to kill time. It's too valuable, right?
Right.
Time isn't meant to be killed. Sit down and write a note to somebody.
I like that.
Just to say, I'm thinking of you and you've meant a lot to me in my whole life. You know, love, David. Stamp it and mail it and stick it in the first blue box you see. I do it. It's wonderful. It feels good.
I like that idea.
Okay.
I'll do it too.
Thank you. I'm glad. Well, thank you, dear. I hope maybe when you have something next to share, you'll come back and do another one with us.
Thank you.
Because we learn from the people who have had experiences we haven't.
Thank you.
Okay. This is Janet Gallen saying goodbye for now.